From 1975 to 1980, Iran's total fertility rate averaged about 6.2 children per woman. 30 years later, that rate had fallen to just 1.76 per woman, a 70%+ decline. The majority of this decline took place between 1986 and 1996, when the Iranian government implemented a major family planning program. In other words, Iran, seen as one of the more traditional conservative Muslim societies today, engineered one of the most rapid fertility declines in modern history. Today, the country struggles to raise those rates once more. In this video, we take a look at the history of Iran's population and family planning policies. For the first 25 years of the 1990s, we lack modern census data, but estimates imply that Iran's population grew slowly. The estimated population in 1900 was about 10 million, though another estimate in 1898 quoted travelers claiming the number to be, quote, over 8 million, end quote. In 1927, about 2 years after the Pahlavi royal dynasty took power in Iran, the population estimate rose to 12 million. This equates to an annual growth rate of less than 1%, 0.8% or so. This was likely because of the country's poor state of development and startlingly high rates of infant mortality. Writing in the 1850s, Lady Mary Shell, the wife of a British envoy to Persia, observed that, quote, not above 3 of 10 children outlived their third year. Ladies of even moderate wealth and station never nurse their children and do not seem to care for them when they are very young. Afterwards, they are affectionate mothers. Hygiene was a serious issue, causing outbreaks of smallpox, diphtheria, measles, malaria, and other diseases affecting children. An internal government report noted that qualified doctors were rare, and married couples regularly had 6 or 7 children, but generally only 1 or 2 survive. But under Pahlavi rule, Iran's development accelerated. The dynasty's founding ruler Reza Shah Pahlavi passed modernizing reforms. This included modern water systems and the establishment of modern institutions for nursing, midwifery, and other modern medicine. These doubled annual population growth rates to 1.5%. Development rates accelerated after World War II. This is in no small thanks to the elimination of malaria, which consumed a third of the United States' total aid to Iran in the 1950s. Malaria had once been endemic in Iran. 60% of the population lived in areas infested with it. Malaria alone contributed 30-40% of total mortality, and Iranians suffered nearly 5 million cases a year. In 1945, the United States Army Malaria Control Unit held their first anti-malarial training course in the country. 2 years later, the Iranian and U.S. governments ran a major anti-malarial campaign. The widespread use of the insecticide DDT helped majorly suppress the disease. From 1953 to 1956, over 410,000 villages, home to 12.4 million people, were sprayed with DDT. Combined with anti-malarial drug treatments, chemical sprays, and even biological controls with mosquito fish, the Iranian anti-malarial campaign was a massive success. By 1973, entire regions in the north saw the scourge eliminated, and countrywide cases had fallen to just 12,000 by the end of the decade. Throughout this time, Iranian women were still giving birth to 6 to 7 children, but now far more of those children were living past their first few years, a classic population boom. In 1956, Iran's first modern census recorded 18.9 million people. The growth rate had accelerated 2.2% and then over 3% during the 1960s. This made Iran one of the world's fastest growing countries population-wise. Iran, though, was still a developing country. Can it give all these new children a good life? But at first, the Iranian government resisted intervention, notably voting against the issue at a United Nations vote in 1962. That year, however, the government added the issue of population to its third development plan, showing that they were thinking about it. Then in 1966, the country's second modern census showed a population of 25.7 million people, and its dependency ratio, defined by the number of people aged under 14 years and over 65 years, divided by the number of people between 15 and 64, was 99%. This implies a staggeringly young or old country. The United States' dependency ratio in 1966 using the same 14-year-old criteria was 65.8%. This immensely young population meant immense future investments in providing space, food, water, and education for all these new kiddos. For instance, in 1966, just 28% of the whole country was literate. The country was also rapidly urbanizing. The country's whole population rose 36% in the 10 years from 1956 to 1966, but the population of Tehran, its biggest city, exploded 80% over the same time period. Urban populations cost even more money to raise. This affected the country's overall socio-economic development, and in 1966, Mohammad Reza Pahlavi signed a World Leaders Declaration on Population, committing to a population control and family planning policy. Thusly, the government passed its first family planning policy a year later in 1967. Early on, the plan focused on introducing modern contraceptives. Birth control and IUDs have been available since 1960, but the plan made them available to women in public health clinics. There was a great uptake. In 1967, about 20,000 cycles each month were being distributed. By 1970, that grew to over 4 million. New policies protecting women were also passed. The Iranian Family Protection Act of 1967 curbed the husband's previously unilateral right to divorce. It also required the first wife's consent for a husband to marry a second wife. In 1973, the development plan targeted a 2% population growth rate by 1978. The laws forbidding abortion and sterilization were repealed, and a large media campaign publicized that, quote, two children are enough, end quote. These efforts saw some success. In the 10 years from 1966 to 1976, the fertility rate declined from 7 to about 6.1. The urban area saw an especially large decline, with 54% of urban couples using contraception compared to the 20% of rural couples. Nevertheless, it remained traditional for families to have at least 4 to 5 children, with contraception used only after that. The third census showed the country growing to 33.7 million people large, growing at about 2.7% a year. Fueled by oil sales, foreign investment, and infrastructure, Iran's economy grew many times over under the Shah's rule. However, his government's heavy-handedness, inability to address perceived inequalities, and disregard of Islamic ideology led to its overthrow in 1979. The Islamic Republic of Iran came to power preaching a repudiation of the Shah's Western-influenced policies, and that included family planning. Islamic religious leaders, including Supreme Leader Ayatollah Khomeini, had previously called family planning an imperialist plot to reduce the number of Muslims in the world. Indeed, the new government, seeing a large population as being a gift from God, dropped many of the Shah's family planning policies. Abortion was once again made illegal, family planning boards were disbanded, though many government-run clinics kept distributing services until supplies ran out. With oral birth control, there was some initial confusion. At first called un-Islamic, drugstores stopped selling it. But eventually Khomeini, after discussing it with the Minister of Health, issued a fatwa in 1980 saying that contraception was not inconsistent with Islamic tenets so long that the husband consented. The government saw early marriage as a tool to eradicate moral corruption and lowered the legal age of adulthood to 9 for girls and 14 for boys. The Shah's prior minimum age of marriage, 16 for girls, 18 for boys, was dropped as well. The family protection law was essentially annulled. Other policies indirectly encouraged family growth. Aware of their tenuous grip on power, the new Iranian government spent substantial resources on free food and fuel rations, free education, albeit of a more Islamic nature, for both men and women, and basic health care. These populist measures made it easier for families to raise more children. Because of these pro-natalist laws, or perhaps post-revolutionary feelings, the country's population growth rate re-accelerated in the first half of the 1980s. Families in the large and dry Sistan and Baluchistan province had a fertility rate approaching 10 per woman. In 1980, Iraq invaded Iran, kicking off 8 long years of vicious war. The government suddenly had far bigger fish to fry than cooking up new family planning policies. The war took a heavy human toll, perhaps 500,000 in casualties. However, Iran's maintenance of the aforementioned food, fuel, education, and basic health measures meant that maternal and infant mortality continued to fall throughout the decade. Credit to the government for that. There was rationing, but never a famine during the war. Thus, population growth more than made up for the loss. This, though, led to a concern. Outwardly, the government's religious leaders continued to push Iranians to have as many children as possible. But inside, there was a realization that such a rapidly growing population was not financially viable. This was particularly clear to the university-trained economists and planners of the government's plan and budget organization, responsible for preparing the budget. Then in 1986, the price of oil collapsed, falling to prices not seen since 1974. The war was then going into its sixth year with no end in sight, and losing all that oil money only deepened the concerns of the government's budgeting organizations. And then there was the 1986 census, which found the population growing to 49 million people. Between 1976 and 1986, the population had grown nearly 4% a year. That was all natural birth. Total fertility rate remained very high, over 6 kids per woman. Oral contraceptive usage had not yet caught on. Surveys found that just 64% of urban and 31% of rural families used at least one family planning method. Iran was staggeringly young. 45% of the population was under 14 years old. Out of the 49.4 million total people, the active labor force was just 13 million, of which only 11 million were employed. Iran had long struggled to produce enough jobs for its youths, so a third of those jobs were government jobs. Even discounting the war's burdens on the country, there was not enough for everyone, and it became increasingly clear to the Iranian government that family planning had to be revived, despite its religious leaders' resistance to this quote-unquote imperialist measure. To win broad popular support, over the next 2 years, the government circulated messaging from and interviews with ministers emphasizing the dangers of overpopulation. The family planning policy was positioned as a crisis measure, not a normal development policy. And crucially, the clergy were also invited to give input on the ethics and social morality of any population measure sponsored by the government. Key religious leaders were shown the data and asked for guidance. A public debate followed. In 1988, the United Nations brokered a ceasefire, ending the Iran-Iraq War. Now Iran had to confront the task of rebuilding the country and creating prosperity for the tens of millions within its borders. In September that year, the Plan and Budget Organization organized a national seminar in the city of Mashhad on population policy, inviting policymakers, the clergy, and scholars. Together, they crafted a national family planning program that was ratified by Supreme Leader Khomeini shortly before his passing in 1989. To adhere to both Islamic, moral, and democratic values, the 1989 policy cannot tell people how many children they should have. Such a policy would only be a thinly disguised measure of population control and reduction, and thus morally wrong. So policymakers made it clear that couples had a choice to decide how many children they eventually wanted. There were three major goals. First, it encouraged families to space out their births with about 3 to 4 years in between. Second, it discouraged pregnancies in women under 18 and over 35. And third, it sought to limit the number of children in the family to 2 or 3. But again, couples retained the final choice to have more if they wished. These goals would be achieved using several measures. First, organized education programs in schools, colleges, and mass media about population and family matters. Second, a major expansion in the delivery network for contraception for married couples. Rural health clinics would be at the very heart of the system, staffed by government-trained community health workers operating in local villages. Third, to set itself apart from the population control policies over in those imperialist countries, Iran added an infertility component, offering services like IVF across the country for those who could not easily conceive. These were widely publicized, despite the expense of doing so. From 1986 to 1995, the fertility rate fell from above 6 to just 2.8. Sometime in 1998 or 2000, the rate dipped below 2.1, a milestone number generally seen as the replacement rate to maintain a population's size. This decline surprised many observers, to the point some argue fraud. The decline is greater than what was seen in Algeria, Turkey, Bangladesh, and Indonesia. And It is worth parsing because, as with all things related to fertility, there are many factors in play. Did the family planning program work? Yes and no. Yes, in the context of that 85% of the fertility decline between 1986 and 1996 can be tied to fertility within married couples, and the program vastly expanded their access to contraceptive options. In 1976, the contraceptive prevalence rate was 37%. By the mid-1990s, that number hit the 70% range and has largely stayed there. The gains were particularly high in rural areas. This resulted in a reduction of unintended pregnancy rate from over 30 births per 1,000 in the early 1990s to under 25. But it's not that simple. Most notably, you can argue that the decline in Iranian fertility began as early as 1984, 5 years before the new policy came into effect. There are other things in play. First and foremost, gains in women's education. Despite restrictions placed on Iranian women, the government continued its commitment to educating its women in addition to its men. From 1966 to 1996, girls' literacy rate rose from 57% to 97% in urban areas and 5% to 86% in rural areas. Many more Iranians were entering higher education, with women making up over half of that. Education tends to expand people's life options, causing them to put off childbearing for later. Tied to this, Iranian women got married increasingly later in life. In 1976, it was about 19 years old. By 2006, it was 24 years old, though, as I mentioned, it is hard to argue this to be a major contributor to the fertility collapse. Another major factor are Iran's urbanization trends. Fertility rates in rural areas were twice that urban areas as early as 1976. By 1996, over 60% of the country was living in big cities. There were also continuing improvements in infant mortality. In 1984, 60 babies out of 1,000 live births passed away early. By 2000, this had been cut in half to just 29. And this rate continues to fall, a majestic improvement. But fewer babies passing away means reduced need for quote-unquote replacement births. One can also point to the stagnant economy. This point might resonate with other youths in the West and East Asia. Education costs make it more expensive to raise children. A bad economy makes it harder to raise more than what you can afford. Isolated from the world, Iran's economy has centralized even more, making the creation of new, high-paying jobs difficult. High inflation, the removal of subsidies, and the absence of policies for children beyond number 3 made rearing big families more financially burdensome. If you can recall, the original context of the 1989 family planning policy was that Iran was suffering a crisis. The government did not lay out a timeline for how long the policy should last, though, but the policies remained in place into 2005, likely due to the reform-mindedness of the Iranian presidents at the time, Akbar Rafsanjani and then Mohammad Khatami. But then in 2005, with the country's official fertility rate at 1.8 per woman, a new, more conservative president came to power, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. Ahmadinejad can be described as wanting a return to the principles of the Iranian Revolution at all costs. And one topic he remarked on, amongst many, was the family planning policies. Backed by the results of the 2006 census, showing a drastic slowing in the population growth rate, he began attacking the existing birth control policy. In December 2006, he told the Iranian parliament, "Two children are not enough. Iran's population needs to reach 120 million people." In 2010, Iran was estimated to have about 75 million people. Over half of them are under 35 years old. Over 28% of its people aged 15 to 24 years old were unemployed. Nevertheless, Ahmadinejad called the two-child policy an artifact imported from the West, asserting that the West feared that Iran's surging population would triumph over them. In another speech in 2010, he said that Iran can support not 120 million, but 150 million people. Iran's supreme leader, Ali Khamenei, somewhat gave Ahmadinejad his backing, saying that the family planning policy was right when it was implemented in the late 1980s. However, quote, "Its continuation in later years was wrong. Scientific and expert studies show that we will face population aging and reduction in population if the birth control policy continues." The Supreme Leader's words marked a return to pro-natalist policies in 2012. The family planning agencies were defunded, permanent sterilizing methods like vasectomies were banned with exceptions, contraceptives were no longer free, which has raised concerns about possible repercussions. On the carrot side, Ahmadinejad presented a plan for the government to pay families for new children. In this plan, every new child would have $950 deposited into a government account and receive $95 a year until they turned 18. I cannot find documentation on whether it is still run today. The 2012 reversal did produce a slight rebound in birth rates. Rates rose to a steady 2 births average through 2017, but they have since collapsed down to under 1.7 per World Bank data. I do note that a few have argued that the official statistics undercount fertility rate, saying that the ratio of total birth statistics to fertile age cohort imply a higher range of about 2. But regardless, the trend remains intact, the reasons for which broadly remain the same. Couples delaying first marriage and wanting smaller families, lack of economic opportunity, expensive housing, higher expectations for the next generation, expensive child rearing, what have you. Today, Iran's population of 89 million continues to grow, but at a meager 0.7% a year. That rate is slowing. If trends do not reverse, then the population eventually will, too. And it extrapolates out to some interesting things down the line. It's widely known that Japan, South Korea, and maybe the People's Republic of China are some of the most troubled countries demographically. But Iran is projected to be right there with them. By 2050, assuming current trends hold, some 31% of Iranians will be over the age of 60, and 22% will be over 65 years old. Some aging models, and I know accuracies vary, find that between 2015 and 2050, Iran is projected to be the world's second fastest aging society in terms of percentage point increase of elders over 60, 65, or 80. It is for this reason that Supreme Leader Khamenei, himself 85 years old, has repeatedly mentioned the need for boosting the fertility rate in order to avoid an aging society. But his goal of 150 million Iranians by 2050, discounting Afghan undocumented immigrants, which is a can of worms I shall not open, seems very far away indeed. Iran is instead on track to be the world's third oldest country by 2041. Of course, Iran is not the only country, even in the Middle East, facing the challenge of collapsing fertility rates. According to 2012 UN data, 7 of the top 15 highest fertility declines between 1950 and 2010 were from Arab nations. Even those without massive oil reserves have found themselves following this trend as well. Demography is not destiny, and I make no comment on what this means for Middle Eastern geopolitics. But one issue I do see is that such societies are not as prepared for aging as those in East Asia or Europe are. There are few old age pensions, state pensions, or programs for elder care. If the state does not move soon to provide such programs for its rapidly aging people, then those people will suffer in what should be their best but final years. Alright everyone, that's it for tonight. Thanks for watching. Subscribe to the channel, sign up for the Patreon, and I'll see you guys next time.